Get 15% off a set of BrakeBest Select, Select Pro, or Import Direct brake pads and two rotors now at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
In Louisiana, two of the four escaped inmates have been found hiding in a dumpster behind the Dollar General store. Two are still at large. In Massachusetts, a man dubbed the Bad Breath Rapist has been caught after 16 years on the run. And in Florida, a woman has been arrested after driving five times over the legal limit while rushing to work and killing a mother of three. These stories and more coming at you today, Friday, May 31st, on Real Life Real Crime Daily, and I'm Jim Chapman. And I am doing it solo again today. Woody, still sick. And KJ couldn't join me today, unfortunately, but she will be joining me tomorrow to record Monday's episode. So look for that. And thank you again to Miss Kelly Jennings of Unspeakable, a true crime podcast by Kelly Jennings, for helping us out pretty much anytime we need it, if she's able. And look, before we get into today's stories, I want to address something. We did, meaning me and Kelly, did a podcast yesterday. And on that podcast, we discussed the Micah Miller case. And this has got a lot of sensitive subject matter with it, to say the least. And there was a misunderstanding on what we were trying to say, or I was trying to say, in that podcast. I have no doubt, zero doubt in my mind that Micah Miller's husband was complicit in her death. 100% asshole. Okay. Do I believe that he drove her to commit suicide? Yes. I believe that. That's my opinion. But I do believe that she committed suicide. The point of that article was challenging those who thought he staged her death as a suicide. In other words, he killed her physically, pulled the trigger, and then staged the scene. So I don't want anybody to misunderstand that. I had gotten a couple of messages that apparently assumed that I thought that this guy had nothing to do with her death. That's not the case. In that podcast, if you'll remember, I said it would be hard for me to believe that he killed her and she called the police to say she was killing herself. But I'm going to give you, I've got my hands on right now, it's in my hands, and I'm going to review this with everybody. And this is the sheriff's report on that case. And I just want to review this because this is what makes me confident that she certainly committed suicide. It's also nothing to do with the fact that I think he was complicit in it, and I think he should face justice for it. So 2:54 p.m., this is on April 24th, a 911 call was made from Micah Miller's cell phone. And she asked the operator if her phone could be located and then threatened suicide. Micah then hangs up the phone before further information could be obtained by the operator. So that operator attempts to call Micah back multiple times. She was unable to make contact with her. And that operator utilized what's known as rapid SOS to locate Micah. At 3:03 p.m., the sheriff's office in Robinson County, they get dispatched to Lumber River State Park in Orem, North Carolina, in reference to the well-being and to do a check and attempt to locate Micah. I mentioned Rapid SOS, and I just want to tell you what that is. That's a system used by many sheriff's offices, but Robinson County uses it to locate 911 callers and ping their locations, essentially. And it'll ping it to a general area. It won't put it right down on exactly where that call was made, but it was able to ping that general area. So the sheriff's office responds, and at 3:05, they contact Lumber River State Park, where that ping came from. And they then request another phone ping to try to dial down. If you've ever used like Life 360 or something, if you, you know, every time you refresh, sometimes it'll hit on a different tower and it'll get you closer to where that person is. That's what they're attempting to do. So at 3:33, Robinson County Sheriff's Office, they activate a drone and they dispatch it, or they call the drone operators and they dispatch them to the state park. They're going to search that park with that drone as well. At 3:42, they contact Verizon and they want an updated ping location. They're trying to see if maybe she's moving around the park and they can pick her up as she's moving. Also at 3:42 p.m., detectives locate a black Honda Civic in the parking lot of the park with South Carolina plates. Detectives look inside the car. They pull out the registration. They see that it's registered to Micah Miller. They see a black Sig Sauer gun case in the passenger seat and a box of ammunition in the center console. So they relay that information to deputies that are searching the scene in other areas and the park rangers. At 3:45, the drone arrives to search from the air. Now, while conducting that aerial search, detectives get approached by an individual. And he states he found a bag while fishing and an ID inside belonging to Micah Miller. Detectives take possession of that bag. And then the individual states he also heard crying while he was fishing and a gunshot. And he said at that point he went further into that slough where he was fishing and he located a bag about 2 feet from the water's edge. Then at 4:23 p.m., an individual contacts 911 and says they have located a body in the water, and that individual was also fishing in a kayak when he located that body. So deputies and park rangers, they go to the individual's location, and they confirm that there's a body there. They also confirm that it was Micah Miller. At 5:30 p.m., the chief of detectives for the sheriff's office, he arrives at the incident. And other detectives arrive and they start kind of investigating. They have a CSI technician that arrives also on that location. The medical examiner gets contacted and was also asked to come to the location. The CSI tech photographs the area. He includes Micah Miller's vehicle and all the evidence collected from the scene and around the vehicle of Micah Miller. At 7:11 p.m., they locate the Sig Sauer 9mm firearm in the water. And they also locate inside Micah Miller's vehicle the sales receipt from Dick's Pawn Shop where the gun was purchased, and the sale receipt from a grocery store that she stopped at just prior to her death. So they start investigating all the movements of Micah Miller on that day, which was April 27th of 2024. And as we tell you all the time on this show, you're on camera a million times a day and you don't know it. They, you know, they're cross-referencing this with her cell phone records and her searches on her cell phone and things like that. And they see that she had pulled up her Maps app. And she had typed in the address for Dick's Pawn Shop where she purchased that gun. Just prior to doing that, she pulled up Google on her cell phone and she Googled the address to Dick's Pawn Shop. Then they have some photographs of her vehicle at 12:12 p.m. She pulls up at Dick's Pawn Shop. She goes inside. And they've got several photos of her purchasing that Sig Sauer 9mm gun and departing Dix at 12:34 p.m. And then they have some camera, some license plate detection camera photos. And it is basically on her route to that Lumber River State Park. And look, interstates have these license plate detection cameras that really everybody knows about, but no one knows about. You don't know where they're at. You don't see them or anything. And that's how they're able to track people's movements and things like that. And they were able to track her. And she stops at 1:27 p.m. at a grocery and grill in Mullins, South Carolina. Then she leaves Mullins, South Carolina. She's about 41 minutes from Lumber River State Park. And this is something that's very, I guess, interesting to me as far as the investigation's concerned. She then Googles from her cell phone, national parks near me. And it pulls up Lumber River State Park and it gives an address. And that's where she ended up going. I know there was a comment that her parents made that they had never visited there and it was just a strange place for her to go to do something like that. Who knows what goes through people's minds when they're at this point, right? And, but it makes me think, seeing that, she did not know where the park was. Maybe she had heard of it, but she didn't know where it was. She's trying to figure out how to get there. And so it would make sense, if she's never been there, that she would search it in her cell phone. Then they have a picture of her car parked at that park. What do the police do when these things happen? There's been a lot of reports that there was a rush to judgment on a suicide. You know, there's a lot that points to a suicide here. When you call and you say, I'm going to kill myself and I want my parents to know or my family to know where I'm at, of course, that's going to be your first thought. Is this person committed suicide? But shout out to these cops because they did investigate John Paul Miller's location and things like that. I mean, anytime you work these investigations, you're working them from the inside out. So if you're married, they're going to look at the husband first and work their way out. But I'm sure, like any human being, their first thought was probably, oh, this poor girl killed herself. So they do. They check out his location, and they start investigating him. And they start out on that Friday. In April 26, John Paul Miller, her husband, had traveled to Charleston, North Carolina for a sporting event. And they were able to corroborate this information. They didn't just take him at his word. He actually had people, eyewitnesses, that saw him and talked to him, and they were able to corroborate that. License plate readers even identified his truck traveling towards Charleston, South Carolina, which is nowhere near North Carolina where she was. Eyewitnesses also obtained, or detectives obtained from eyewitnesses, statements confirming that John Paul Miller stayed overnight in that area. And a license plate reader did identify his vehicle returning to Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. His truck was captured by a license plate reader at 2:22 p.m. on Saturday, the same day that this death occurred, in South Carolina. While traveling to and from Charleston, he was accompanied by other individuals. So you have people saying, this guy was with us. And they show pictures of his truck, you know, traveling back and forth and all those license plate reader things. They've got statements from witnesses that not only saw him there, but also statements from people that were in the vehicle with him, traveling with him. And they have those pictures from both Friday and Saturday. And you've got witness statements. I can't say that enough because that's, you know, that's a pretty loctite alibi. It's not only witnesses that are with you. It's not only friends that are with you. It's people that may have barely knew you that, oh yeah, I did see that guy. He was here at this time. So I want to say this, and then we're going to get into our news stories for today. I want to be crystal clear on this. I have no doubt he was complicit in the fact that she committed suicide. I do think that he needs to face justice for that somehow. But I will say that all the evidence that I've seen so far, sadly, this beautiful young woman committed suicide. And I know that her family is coming out and pointing to some things, and I don't blame them at all. I understand. I get it. Look, suicide has occurred in my family, very close to me. So I know about this. I understand this, what the family is feeling and thinking. And I can tell you that when it happens and it's a close family member, you don't want to accept it. You don't want to believe it. And you want to look at every other possibility you can. Very hard to accept that sort of outcome for families. So I get it. And I don't blame them. And I understand it. But at the end of the day, every piece of evidence I've seen, this woman pulled the trigger. Just my opinion. Until I see something that shows otherwise. But this guy cannot be in two places at once. So I just wanted to reiterate that and recover that. Sorry that took a little longer than we normally cover for stories, but I just felt like I wanted to clarify that so there was no misunderstanding. So now we're going to get into today's stories. We're taking you to Louisiana, and I told you the other day about four inmates that had escaped from custody, and three of those inmates being murderers. Two of those men who busted out of that jail east of Baton Rouge, Louisiana, over the weekend, have been taken into custody after being found hiding in a dumpster behind a Dollar General store. The Tangipahoa Parish Sheriff's Office says Avery Gidry, 19, and Trayvon Johnson, 21, were tracked down. They were about 20 miles south of that jail. So they made it 20 miles, y'all. Deputies located them hiding in a dumpster behind that Dollar General on Pumpkin Center Road and Old Baton Rouge Highway. Now, two other inmates, Omarion Hookfin, who is 19, and Jamarcus Cyprian, who is 20, do remain at large. Tangipahoa Parish Sheriff Daniel Edwards said the four inmates escaped through a perimeter fence of the Tangipahoa Parish Jail during rec time in the jail yard on Sunday night. And after an inspection of that perimeter fence, the section was determined to be vulnerable and easily maneuvered in a way that a body could slip through. Johnson, Hookfin, and Gidry were all in jail with connection to a 2022 homicide in Hammond, Louisiana, and Cyprian was behind bars for armed robbery and weapons charges. Hookfin was also charged with aggravated battery while he was incarcerated at a Catahoula Parish jail. So I'm sure he got in a jail fight and just added to his charges. But two of those guys are still at large. Let's hope the next episode that we drop, we have an update that those two have been caught. But fortunately, two of the four are back behind bars.
If people are dieting now more than ever before, why are nearly one in three American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that doesn't turn into fat when you consume it. Instead, it turns into a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body.
So getting more MCTs in your diet is like flipping a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which flushes out excess fat and calories. And Dr. Gundry has created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it comes in a tasty drink form. It actually tastes good. All you do is add a scoop to water, enjoy, and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized.
So if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to GundryMD.com/RLRC and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. And again, that's GundryMD.com/RLRC.
Awesome.
All right, good deal.
Hey, everybody, it's Aggo. Listen up, especially you ladies over 40. I've got some good news. It's called Hormone Harmony. Hormone Harmony is an all-in-one hormonal balancing solution. It relieves symptoms of menopause. It promotes healthy weight loss and curbs cravings. It improves sleep quality. It reduces bloating and gas. It relieves hot flashes. It can even relieve occasional mood swings, although nothing like that has ever happened in my house. Hormone Harmony isn't just for menopause. Any woman with symptoms of hormonal imbalance should take it, but it's perfect for the horrible menopause symptoms that make you put your life on hold. For a limited time, you can get 15% off on your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use code RLRC at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and code RLRC at checkout for 15% off today.
All right, so we're bringing you to Georgia. And a Georgia man convicted of stalking a 15-year-old girl on Snapchat before brutally attacking her in her family's home has been sentenced to life in prison after pleading guilty. Zachary Iona, 22, met the victim on a smartphone app in 2022 and groomed her until she invited him over. He arrived with duct tape, rope, and a knife, then gagged her and sexually assaulted her before stabbing her 86 times all over her body, including her face. 86 times. That's turning that poor girl into a pincushion. Iona left the severely injured girl for dead. However, she did have the strength to call 911. She survived the horror and spoke at Iona's sentencing, telling the court she considers it a blessing to be alive. The app Iona used to find his victim is also how police tracked him down. They found a picture of him on her phone. Then they found evidence in his car, including a roll of duct tape and blood. Iona pleaded guilty to all charges in a 7-count indictment Thursday. Charges included rape, aggravated assault, and carrying of a knife while committing a felony. As part of the plea deal, Iona will be eligible for release after serving 35 years, followed by 5 years of parole and registering as a sex offender. Now, the district attorney by the name of Patsy Gatson said this should be a warning to all our young people. As this case demonstrates, not everyone you meet on social media has your best interest at heart. Social media accounts under Iona's name showed he attempted to attract an online audience with music and gaming videos, but had just a couple of hundred followers. The victim reportedly had to undergo multiple surgeries and physical therapy even to regain her ability to walk. And the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children warns of a growing threat involving minors targeted online by strangers. Experts there say that predators are increasingly picking their victims after meeting them through applications. Children are being enticed, and the victims are more often boys than girls. However, boys are increasingly targeted under sextortion schemes over the app. Crooks coax victims into sharing personal information, including nude photos, and then threatening them and demanding money. And let's talk about that for a minute, y'all, because that's a real deal. There was a case right here in this parish where I'm recording right now, Livingston Parish, where that just happened recently. As a matter of fact, I talked about it on this show, and it was a 18-year-old senior in high school who's sextorting 14, 15-year-old girls. I think there was even some 12-year-old girls all over the country. He was talking them into sending nude photos and then using those nude photos against them to get other things, money or whatever. It is a major problem. And look, when I was a kid, anyway, there was no internet. Internet just came into existence maybe when I was a senior in high school or junior in high school. I remember the advent of the internet. But we didn't have to worry about that. And your parents, they might sit you down and tell you about the birds and the bees, so to speak, but they didn't have to sit you down and tell you don't talk to strangers online because you don't even know who they are. These people could be posing as a 15-year-old boy and it's a 45-year-old man. I actually had that situation occur very close to someone very close to me. It's really awful. And it is becoming a major issue. But the sextorting part of all this, where they're with the nude photos, I mean, it's pretty sad nowadays that you'd have to sit down your, 15-year-old kid or 13-year-old kid or however, whatever age, and say, don't take naked pictures of yourself and send them to people you don't know. And I know in that article it says it's much more prominent with girls than boys, and it indeed is. But, boys are having an issue with that as well. It could be someone posing as a girl that is actually a 40-year-old guy. And it's pretty sad that you got to sit your kids down now and tell them about all these dangers, but certainly something that maybe parents need to have more of a discussion with their kids on, especially with the gaming. I mean, all these kids are gaming now. Now we're going to go to Michigan. You know, this guy that I'm about to tell you about may not have a brain cell in his head, and you're going to love this story. A Michigan man with a suspended driver's license joined a digital court hearing about his case from behind the wheel of a vehicle he was driving. Corey Harris did not physically appear in court for his hearing. Instead, he dialed in on a Zoom call while he was driving to plead his case about a suspended license, mind you. This according to the video of a hearing posted on a YouTube page. Simpson, the judge, asked Harris whether he was driving when he joined the hearing. He told the judge, Simpson, that he was pulling into a parking spot at his daughter's office and would be ready for the hearing. Just give him 1 second. After a brief pause and Simpson confirming Harris was stationary, the attorney representing Harris, an attorney by the name of Natalie Pate, asked for a continuance for 2 to 4 weeks. Okay, so maybe I don't understand something, the judge said after appearing to review the case in front of him. This is a driving while license suspended, correct? Pate confirmed that he was looking at a case involving driving without a license. And he was just driving and he doesn't have a license, the judge responded. Those are the charges, yes, that from the attorney. But Simpson quickly replied, no. I'm looking at his record. He doesn't have a license. He's suspended, and he's driving. Pate again confirmed that the judge was correct. Simpson then looked around the courtroom, taking a long pause, and a smile came across his face. He looked up, and he said, I don't even know why he would do that, referring to Harris, who was still on the Zoom call from his car. The judge then revoked Harris' bond and instructed him to turn himself into jail that evening. Harris dropped his head back and said, oh, my God. It was not immediately clear whether Harris had turned himself in, as the judge requested at the time that I'm bringing you this story. But you cannot make that shit up. As a matter of fact, I think we're going to start a segment that we'll do every once in a while called You Can't Make This Shit Up. Because you can't make that up. Driving under a suspended license during your court hearing. Unbelievable. And we're going to bring you to some serious news coming out of Northern California. A convicted rapist dubbed as the Bad Breath Rapist has been caught more than 16 years after he fled Massachusetts. This according to authorities. Tuan Lee, who was arrested in Northern California on Tuesday, broke into a co-worker's house and raped her. This was way back on February 2nd of 2005. Now, he was ultimately identified by DNA and his horrible breath, which produced the nickname the Bad Breath Rapist. In 2007, a jury found Lee guilty of rape and kidnapping, but he had already fled the state. Authorities hunted for Lee for years, with detectives putting in hundreds of hours of research, and investigators also publicized the case on the TV show America's Most Wanted. And I actually remember this episode from way back then. Now, this year, police zeroed in on a multi-million dollar home owned by a woman in Diablo, California, which is about 25 miles east of Oakland. And on Tuesday, police surveilled Lee and a woman leave that home and they conducted a traffic stop on that car. Now, Lee at first gave authorities a fake name, as you would expect, but he later admitted his true identity, and that was confirmed by fingerprints. His female companion, after 15 years of being together in California, never even knew his real name, never knew who he really was. He was gave her a fake name the whole time. And Lee was on the run for more than 16 years, and the unwavering dedication of law enforcement to locate and arrest him brings peace of mind to the victim and her families. That from the chief inspector of that case, Sean LaPiccolo. So the Bad Breath Rapist, after 16 years, has finally been caught, and that's a great thing. Now I'm going to take you to Florida, and this is just an awful case. A Florida woman is behind bars after she was nearly five times over the legal limit for drinking when, while running late for work and speeding, she T-boned another vehicle, killing its driver. This was in Winter Springs, Florida. Officers said they responded to what was described as a horrific crash at an intersection in Winter Springs around 10 a.m. on Tuesday. The crash claimed the life of Tiffany Alexander, a wife and mother of three children, and she succumbed to those injuries at a local hospital following the crash. Police said Asnabal Escobar, 25, a bartender and restaurant manager in Sanford, was arrested at her home Wednesday night and booked into the Seminole County Jail on charges of DUI homicide and a slew of other charges. I don't know anybody in this room, if we be standing at a blood alcohol level of 0.38, that from the police. They also said, I don't really know how she was driving at 0.38. It boggles my mind. Alexander's friend from the running club told police that she had just left the park and was driving behind Alexander at the time of the crash. Escobar ran a red light while speeding, and it's unclear exactly how fast she was driving yet, but y'all, they have tests that they'll run and some investigative techniques where they're going to be able to tell exactly how fast she was going. Escobar told police she drank her last alcoholic beverage around 1:30 a.m., which was hours before the crash, when she visited a Sanford bar after work. After that, she claimed she went home, spent time with a roommate, woke up and left her house at 9:40 a.m. to go to work. And the chief said, you know, I find it hard to believe at 10 o'clock in the morning, you're at 0.38. So at 1:30 in the morning, if you stopped drinking, what were you, like a 0.5 or 0.6? I don't know. You should be dead at this point, the chief said. Chief said two of Alexander's three children were in the back seat at the time of the crash. Oh, that's horrible. They sustained minor injuries and are expected to be okay, thank God. The chief also said this accident could have been totally prevented if Miss Escobar made good choices that day, and we all know she did not make good choices in this case. Well, that's obvious. Horrible, awful situation. And look, these drunk drivers, there are way too many options. That just infuriates me because the options that are available now for people, hey, we all go, or I don't want to say all of us, but most of us go out and, you know, we'll have a few drinks. Well, guess what? They have Uber. Uber. I know friends that if they're planning on drinking, they Uber to and from. Number one, it's not worth anybody else's life because you made a bad decision, but it's not worth it to ruin your life because you made a bad decision. And when you're drinking, you are not going to make the choices you would make when you're sober. So, and we're going to bring you back to Louisiana, and we're going to Baton Rouge, and a Baton Rouge man has accessed bank accounts and stole nearly $180,000. This Baton Rouge man was sentenced to 70 months in prison after he was convicted for conspiracy to commit wire fraud. The U.S. attorney, Ronald Gaith, announced that Chief Judge Shelley Dick handed down the sentence to Terrence August, who is 48. August was also sentenced to serve 3 years of supervised release following his prison term. The man was ordered to pay $179,000 in restitution and some change. So good luck getting $180,000 from this guy now. But according to admissions made by part of his guilty plea, August conspired and agreed with others to commit wire fraud. Now, the Department of Justice released a press release and said August and co-conspirators defrauded financial institutions by using the personal identifying information of banking customers, names, social security numbers, and dates of birth to obtain account information. August and other co-conspirators basically contacted these financial institutions and request changes to victims' accounts. So basically what happened is during these calls, these guys would call a victim and they would say, hey, this is XYZ Bank and we need to do some changing to your account. And they would talk these people out of their phone numbers, their mailing addresses, their social security numbers, all these things. They would gain that information and they would actually gain access to their accounts and transfer money, essentially. And this, although this guy was arrested in Louisiana, this was occurring all over the country. He was just based out of Louisiana, but $180,000. And look, you know, bestie bank chick, Lori Johnson at Hancock Whitney Bank. This is for her, kind of like almost her life's mission. She preaches on banking fraud all the time, everywhere she goes. And it's because she sees so much of it occurring. It is one of the most costly crimes out there. And the problem with it is most of the times with these banking fraud schemes, the perpetrators are not even in the United States. And they'll have you do things like transfer cash into Bitcoin is a big one right now, because once it becomes Bitcoin, it's gone. It's gone. You ain't never seeing that money again. And guess what? The bank, if you give all your financial information to somebody, the bank is not going to reimburse you for that. if they make an error, they'll reimburse. But a bank, no bank on God's green earth is going to reimburse you if someone calls you and talks you out of your money. There's even people that they will talk into going to the bank, withdrawing the money, and then going to an ATM that you can make deposits in, and it transfers it into Bitcoin at the ATM. They will talk them into doing that. And that happens. You're never going to see your money again. So be very, very cognizant of those sorts of things. You should never have to give out your personal information like your social security number over the phone. If you're curious, if you think it might be legit, but you're not sure, go to your bank personally. Talk to them in person. Don't give all that information out over the phone.
Get 15% off a set of BrakeMess Select, Select Pro, or Import Direct brake pads and two rotors now at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh. It must be a kinky crime, y'all, and I'm giving you the kinky crime for today. And this one's kinky. This just occurred. This is breaking news. A Florida woman has jumped into the water from a historic pier in a daring dash to evade police after she and a man were caught having sex in public. This in Naples, Florida. Alyssa Rezo, who is 20, and Zadok Westfield, who is 23, were on a Naples pier in Naples around 4:30 p.m. This occurred on Memorial Day when police arrived on the scene after having received multiple reports of the pair engaged in sex. The pier is the favorite location for sightseers. I bet they got some sights that day. And is known for fishing, bird watching, dolphin spotting, and stunning sunrise and sunset views. A police officer told the romping duo to get dressed before they both stood up, looking obviously very disheveled. Rezo adjusted her swimsuit and then stepped to the edge of the pier and jumped into the water, despite the police officer telling her not to. Rezo began to swim northeast toward the beach, and as you would expect, the second she exited the water, the beach patrol nabbed her. Westfield stayed with the police officer, and he explained to him that he and Rezo had initially swam out to the end of the pier and then climbed to the top in order to jump off. But instead, they decided to have sex in an area behind a locked gate on the pier. So you're going to climb up and jump off. And hey, man, when the mood hits you, the mood hits you. A witness told police she was on the beach with her children and her friends when she saw the pair having sex. The witness said her minor children were asking questions about what the subjects were doing. Oh, my gosh. Rezo and Westfield were both charged with trespassing and breach of the peace. breach of the peace, huh? And disorderly conduct. Rezo was also charged with resisting arrest without violence. And a little history on the pier. It was first built in 1888, and it actually stretches into the Gulf of Mexico. And, of course, due to hurricanes that seem to take place a lot in Florida, it's been rebuilt several times. Actually, in Hurricane Ian in 2022, more than 30 pilings collapsed half of the pier before being washed away. So today, it's only partially open. But shout out to the police for stopping that little pier sex romp. And that is a kinky crime, and your kinky crime for today. Mile High Crimes is back. We didn't want you to wait too long for that. And this is actually just very disturbing, but a person died just on Wednesday after falling into a spinning turbine blade of a departing passenger jet in Amsterdam's airport. The death occurred on the apron just outside the busy hub's terminal as a flight was ready to depart into Denmark. And KLM, which is the flagship carrier of the Dutch plane, said an incident took place today in which a person ended up running into an aircraft engine. And sadly, this person has died. The airline did not say if the victim was an airport employee, a passenger, or someone else. So Dutch border police, who were responsible for security at the Netherlands' largest airport, said passengers were removed from the plane and an investigation was opened. The plane involved is a small jet, which operates flights to other nearby destinations like London. But that is your Mile High Crime for today. And look, thank y'all all for listening and bearing with us. You know, illnesses happen. Woody's under the weather, and hopefully he'll be back in effect soon. And until next time, I'm Jim Chapman, and for Woody Overton, we're Real Life, Real Crime Daily. Peace.
How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month?
They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.